listeners, and welcome to this episode of Odo Approach. Today, we're honored to have Dr. Evan Propst with us today. Dr. Propst is a distinguished professor in the Department of Otolaryngology at the University of Toronto. He's not only an accomplished otolaryngologist at the Hospital for Sick Children, but also serves as the fellowship director guiding the next generation of otolaryngology trainees. Today, we'll be taking a deeper dive into Dr.'s approach to otolaryngology, paths to research, and exploring the exciting fellowship avenues available after residency. For starters, thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Propst. It's great to have you.
Thanks so much for having me.
So the first question we have for you is, can you share a little bit about your journey in the field of otolaryngology and what inspired you to choose this specialty?
Yeah, sure. So I did my undergraduate at what's now Western Ontario, University of Western Ontario, which is now Western University, and then medical school at University of Toronto. And then at the end of my first year, they had applications for a summer studentship program. And I applied, and it was right at the end of the, it was right before the deadline. I was up at Sunnybrook on a rotation, and I read the summary, which was, we're looking for someone who's interested in music and who likes children, and we need a new shortstop for our ball team. And so I phoned and I said, hi, just wondering, I know today's the last day. And the administrative assistant checked with Blake Papson, who had posted the job. And he said, well, tell him if he can be down here in an hour, then I'll interview him. It was a Friday afternoon. And so I was still at Sunnybrook. And you know what traffic is like getting down from Sunnybrook to down to downtown Toronto. So I literally, just gunned it and parked in my spot, which was not close to the hospital at all, and then sprinted and got here totally winded. And I had probably run about 12 blocks or 15 blocks. And so basically, I walked down the hallway. Blake Papson asked me sort of, what my interests were, what my experience with children was. That was it. So I started as a summer studentship, doing research in the cochlear implant program. And then, I mean, to inspire me to choose a specialty. So, he was one of the main people. From a research point of view, I was working with Bob Harrison and Karen Gordon. They were all three of them were just so amazing. Nothing seemed like work. It was all fun. It was all fun questions, this is a problem we're having. How do we solve it? And I love music, and I played guitar for forever, pretty much. My first project was determining if people with cochlear implants can hear music, and how could that be, and can they discriminate between two different frequencies that are fairly close to each other if in theory they are stimulating the same electrode. And so that was the first my first introduction to the specialty. And then I pursued electives and met Pat Gillane and so many other of the big heavyweights in our profession, who really just seemed to love what they were doing. And the surgery was totally fascinating, and the patients were really interesting. And that's how it became interesting.
Thank you so much for sharing. And in the line of research, something substantial about your career that we didn't mention in the introduction was your passion and dedication to research even today. So your research focus is primarily on airway and head and neck anomalies, particularly in pediatric airways. So what sparked your interest in that to continue throughout your residency training and beyond as well?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I mean, I think it's important to always keep an open mind. I thought that I was going to be an ear person. My research had been ear related. And then during residency, I did my master's degree in the genetics of deafness, again, ear related. But everything was fascinating to me. And, whenever something interesting came up, I would pursue that, whether it was head and neck or what have you. The airway thing was really came about during fellowship. So I was told that, there were no guarantees about positions at SickKids, but that if I was to have any chance of working here, then it would not be in the ear realm, but it would be in the sort of head and neck airway realm. And that if I was interested in that, then I should go and look at Cincinnati Children's Hospital and see what they're up to. And ideally, it was, well, you would need to go do a fellowship there and learn everything that that they do, which is really tall order, because it is a fantastic institution. So I went before, it's a 2-year fellowship. So before going there, and before applying for fellowship, I wanted to see if I liked it. So I went to do an elective and followed them around for a few weeks. And really, I mean, the center is run by Robin Cotton and Chuck Meyer and Mike Rutter and Paul Wilging and Sally Schott and all the big heavy hitters and the names of pediatric otolaryngology, head and neck surgery, and Dan Chu and ear related cochlear implant surgery, et cetera. So I went and watched them, and it was fascinating. They were doing so many things that were new and innovative, and it was they were creative how they were solving their problems, and really, the world's sort of your oyster there. You have unlimited funding, unlimited support, unlimited anything. So that's where I really became interested in airway and head and neck stuff.
That's amazing. It's so fascinating to hear about the spark and how it can kind of change your trajectory, and how you're mentioning how you were interested in the ears before, and then going to this new training site changed your perspective. So it's wonderful to hear about. To go further into the line of research, so as a surgeon and as a scientist in ENT, how do you balance clinical practice with research?
Yeah, it's easier at a place like SickKids where on paper we have protected research time. It wasn't really necessarily the case for the first sort of decade that I was working here. I've been here 13 years now, and research time, if there's a block of open time, it kind of became, oh, well, there's open time. That's somewhere we can, throw in a large case or a few cases or something like that. So, research really took place evenings and weekends, for the most part, for the first many, big chunk of years. So, as I got some partners here with similar interests that I have. I was, we were able to share all of our research projects, and we still do. So the three of us that share all of our work together, and that really, and that's just within our specialty, within our department. Also, sharing research with other departments that we work with, and so that really made it easier to produce good, what we thought was good research, and not spend as much time at home on the weekends and evenings.
Absolutely. And do you find there to be a stronger interlink between the research affecting your clinical practice or your clinical practice affecting your research?
Yeah, so it's interesting. It's I think the best research comes out of your clinical practice. If you have an issue that humans are experiencing and or that you're experiencing and trying to get accomplished for your patients, then you try and improve it, right? And that's to me the best, right? Everyone talks about bench to bedside, et cetera. But really, I think it's bedside to bench and then back to bedside. And because if you spend a ton of time doing research on something, perhaps some tiny little component, you might not see the benefit of it for many, many, many years. And if that might work for some people, for me, and I think for surgeons in general, we kind of want immediate gratification. I joke that sort of every problem we have kind of has to be finished by the end of the day. So I guess the downfall is that I always feel that way about research too. So when I start writing a paper, I'll literally sit down and write the entire thing. I'll just sit down for 5, 6 hours and write the entire thing because I want it done by the end of the day, which is probably not the best way to do things. There's a great quote from Richard Feynman who says that science is the belief in the ignorance of the experts. So I mean, he was a little bit on one extreme, but I think keeping an open mind that there are probably ways to improve most things is maybe a more subtle way to say it. And so why not, right? If you're going to keep doing it every day, then why not try and improve it?
Absolutely. That's a great quote, and thank you so much for sharing. So jumping back a bit, I mentioned that you were the fellowship director for ENT at SickKids, and you were talking about how you yourself received a fellowship in pediatric otolaryngology at the Cincinnati Children's Hospital. Could you share your experience of what led you to specialize in pediatrics and how this fellowship helped influence your career or your ability to get staff?
Sure. So, I had that role from 2012 to 2018, and then two amazing people took split up that role, and they've done fantastic things with it since then. Sharon Cushing took on the fellowship, and Nick Walter took on the residency, and so the so. Sorry, the question was
What led you to specialize in pediatrics as a fellowship and how that influenced your career?
yeah, so pursuing pediatrics as a fellowship, as I had mentioned, that was sort of promoted to me, I guess, as a well, let me back up a little bit. First of all, I knew that I wanted to do pediatrics. And so I was a camp kid. I went to summer camp and so I like being around children. I went from when I was a child until being a counselor and staff, et cetera. And so to me, taking care of kids ha has there are two things. One is that they're just fun. They're adorable. They make your day so much more enjoyable and exciting, and you're laughing and smiling and having a good time with them. And that's I guess a benefit for me, right? The nice thing is that if you can get to a human being and help them when they're young, then you can change the course of their health and hopefully their life, for the rest of their life. So that's a huge difference. So those are sort of the two reasons why I wanted to go into pediatrics. I joke nowadays that the highlight of the time that I spend in clinic is at the end of the visits, I give out stickers to them. We have stickers, and I think I blow a huge amount of our budget on stickers. But that really is the best part of the clinic day. So knowing I wanted to go into pediatrics, the other thing about pediatrics and doing a subspecialty in pediatrics is that you kind of get to do a subspecialty in almost every area, almost every area, right? Because you really pediatrics, I was able to gain a lot of experience in airway surgery and very, advanced airway surgery, but also advanced sinus surgery and also even cosmetic surgery, right? Rhinoplasty, external approaches to rhinoplasty, etc. You get to do advanced otology, right? You get to do advanced head and neck, not so much the free flaps and stuff like that, but you get to still partake in a lot of the oncology and a lot of the benign stuff as well. So it's really a nice, well-rounded specialty in that respect. Pursuing the fellowship at Cincinnati Children's was pretty much like being a kid in a candy shop. I mean, they had, just the otolaryngology department itself had 8 to 10 ORs every day running. Three open airways every day. It just unlimited number of fantastic, exciting cases and new stuff coming in from all over the world, and stuff that we hadn't seen, stuff that we had to figure out what to do with. And so that was really, really exciting.
Oh wow, that's amazing. And for listeners who may be less aware, what other fellowship avenues exist post residency, and what recommendations would you have for some of our more senior trainees listening to decide whether to stick to general practice or pursue a specific fellowship training?
Yeah, so I mean, for otolaryngology, there are basically fellowships in every aspect of it. You can do otology and neuro-otology with vestibular components if you want. You can do rhinology and skull-base surgery. You can do sleep disorder breathing. So there are otolaryngologists who are double board certified. It's more of an American thing, but to be double board certified in both otolaryngology and sleep medicine, and all the surgeries that follow from that. I mean, obviously the head and neck, the oncology, free flaps, and all that, facial plastic surgery. I mean, there's so many. It's so diverse about what you can sort of become an expert in a small area. As far as advice about general practice, I think, there has always been a, at least in Toronto and Ontario, well, if a job comes up in general otolaryngology, then, I better jump on it and take it, not pursue a fellowship, etc. And I did have a similar offer. There were no jobs. There was no guarantee of a job here at SickKids. There were zero jobs anywhere in Ontario, definitely not in Toronto. And I was offered a job by a fantastic person who was an otolaryngologist and was also chief of surgery at the time. And he said, if you don't go to fellowship, then you can have a job here. You can start. That was a very difficult decision to make. I think ultimately fellowship is 1 or 2 years, if you it's something that you can it's a lot easier to do right when you graduate and a lot harder to do if you go into general practice and then want to pursue a fellowship afterwards. I would say if there's any inclination for wanting to do a fellowship, pursue the fellowship. The ability to see all of those complex cases, to make the connections, to get interested, have the spark ignite, all of those things. It's really such an amazing chance for growth that I would say don't give up that opportunity. And if you decide after fellowship that you don't want to work at an academic hospital, then you don't lose your skills, right? And most, almost every subspecialty that you would possibly consider doing a fellowship in, those skills can be translated to even a general practice. And you can always, specify that your practice will, could be general with a bent towards this and towards that specialty. So you're never going to lose that, especially with pediatrics. I mean, I remember when I came back from fellowship and there wasn't a job here at SickKids, for 3 months I worked doing general otolaryngology at what's now Mackenzie Health at York Central. An elderly man came in. He had suffered a stroke and his palate was paralyzed and he couldn't communicate. And he said the worst thing was that he couldn't speak on the telephone. No one could hear him. He would call people and he would just have breathiness and nasal escape. And I said, well, let's see. I've done VPI surgery, right? Pharyngeal flaps for children who have VPI, nasal escape of air and food, etc. And I said, would you be interested in trying this? He said, sure, I'll try anything. And so sure, that wasn't on a child, but it was the same skills, different situation, different scenario, and got his voice back because he didn't have the nasal escape. He was able to call his family on the phone, and when people called him, he didn't. They were able to know that there was a human being on the other side, right, who was speaking to them. So that ability to communicate was great for him, and I would never have known how to do that surgery if I hadn't gone to fellowship. So just, there are always ways that you can take different approaches and use what you know and apply it somewhere else.
Wow, it's a really beautiful story, and it really goes to show how surgery really is almost like an art, and the skills are so transferable. Even though you did a fellowship in pediatrics, like this was a life-changing procedure for the patient you were just talking about. So it's actually quite a beautiful experience to think about.
Me, yeah.
And just to flip the question to the other end of our listeners listening in, for medical students who are wishing to pursue a career in ENT, what advice would you give them based on your experiences? And are there any insights you wish you knew earlier in your career?
Sure. So I would say perseverance is the main, I guess, from my career, perseverance would be the key word. For me, at least, nothing came easily. And so if things don't work out initially, you have to just sit down, reevaluate. Is that still what I want to do? And if it is, then you just keep going at it. We're talking about a very, very small group of people who, get into medical school, and then even a smaller group of people who get into the residency that they want to be in. And then to be able to work at the hospital that you want to work in, to be able to work with the patients you want to work with, and to be able to be surrounded by the people you want to be surrounded with. I mean, it really is. You just really have to persevere and keep going at it if that's what you want. So perseverance, for sure. And when doors close, which they certainly did, all along the way, new doors open, and the path kind of it's a windy path to get where you want. I think just keep at it if that's what you want to do. The other thing is, surround yourself with positive people. Surround yourself with people who, will say, yeah, that's a great idea. How can I help you? Or, and that's really, the people that got me where I am today. But not just saying, yes, how could I, like, that's a great idea. How can I help you? But if they don't think it's a great idea, then they'll help you flesh out, what parts of it would be a good idea, and then how can they help you get to that place? Also, I think yourself being a yes person, right? No one wants the no person, right? Someone has an idea and you're like, nah, whatever, that's been done. No one wants that, right? So be a yes person. And help people to accomplish what they want, but also know when it's too much for you. So you can't always say yes to everyone. Eventually it will be detrimental to your own health, right? So I think there are very polite ways to say, yes, that is a fantastic idea. That's a great project, Unfortunately, I've taken on too much stuff. I will not be able to give you everything that I'd like to, but let me help you find someone who can help you work on that to achieve what you want. I think being honest with yourself and being honest with other people, I wish I had done more of that early on. Probably would have preserved me a little bit more, but definitely being a yes person has made a lot of great connections, and friendships, it really makes the job so much more enjoyable. I think recognizing when you don't know something, being able to say, I know that I just don't know anything about that, right? It came up, we needed to write a patent for a silicone model of the airway. And people told me that it costs $100,000 to have someone write a patent for you. So I said, well, then I will be learning how to write a patent. But I didn't know where to start. And so I went to the people who knew how to write patents and asked them about what to do and said, I don't know anything about this. Is it worth it? Right? How do I do it? Where do I start? What do I do? Etc. And then what came out of that is sort of a realization. There have been many realizations all along that most of the things, if another person can do them, then you can eventually teach yourself to do them too. I mean, and that goes from anything, right? I mean, fixing a garage door opener, learning how to do it on YouTube, to fixing a washing machine, to learning how to do surgery, to whatever it is, right? To code programs, to make websites, to right, whatever it is, someone else has learned it. There's a way to learn it. If you approach it in the right way, then you also can learn how to do it. Those are just some of the things that I've learned along the way. And also, if someone, not everyone's going to love you. I think learning to surround yourself with the positive people that make you happy, that are good for you, that are good influences, and that you can maybe be a good influence on them. Those are all great things. And the people, if people aren't into that, then don't take it personally. And just inch towards the other people that that make you happy.
That's great advice. And for early career aspiring otolaryngologists such as myself, I'll be sure to keep that in mind as I progress through my journey. That's actually all the questions we have for today. But before we wrap up, I want to thank you so much for your time, your insight on navigating otolaryngology, your research, as well as the fellowship opportunities that you shared have truly enriched the episode, and I deeply appreciate your time and your expertise. To our listeners, thank you for joining us and stay tuned for more engaging discussions on the latest in ENT. Until next time.